Our text is going to be the end of James 4, verses 13 through 17. Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow we will go into such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain, whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It's even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. For that you ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. But now you rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. Therefore, to him that knows to do good and does it not, to him it is sin. When we went on vacation a couple months back, and, you know, we were in Texas, and then on the way back, we had a little mini vacation from the vacation. We stopped in Branson for a few days, in a little place along Table Rock Lake. One of the things I wanted to see while I was there was this big development called Indian Ridge Resort. You got to do yourself a favor and Google Indian Ridge Resort and look at the pictures. Not now. I'm glad you want to follow along with the sermon and not. Don't get your cell phones out now. Indian Ridge Resort was this massive vacation community. It was planned as a $1.6 billion with a B investment that would provide hundreds of construction jobs and even more tourist industry jobs, but thanks to an economic crisis and a real estate scheme gone wrong, the resort was shut down in 2006 when many of the buildings were only halfway built. It turned into, and you'll see this if you look at it, it turned into this creepy-looking ghost town out in the middle of the woods in the middle of nowhere. The schemers ended up in federal prison. The only jobs that have been created to this point are the security guards who try in vain to ward off the trespassers who try to sneak in to see this ghost town looking place that's sat empty for about 15 years and counting now. The moral of the story is we make our plans, but often God has another plan. Now, that's what this text is telling us. And so you understand, this text connects to the previous passage pretty simply. Last week, Andrew showed us how verses 11 and 12 warn about the arrogance of slander and how it assumes that we're better than others and that we're above the law when we're not. Now James is going to show how the arrogance of presumption is also a sin, because it assumes that we're above God's will and we're in control of our own future when we're not. Now, for clarity's sake, James is not rejecting the wisdom of making plans. In fact, the Bible often speaks to the fact that it's very prudent to plan ahead. For example, Jesus asked what kind of king would go out to war without first calculating his chances of success? What kind of person would set out to build a tower without thinking ahead whether they had what was necessary in order to complete it? The answer to that, by the way, is the people who planned Indian Ridge Resort. They didn't have what they needed to complete it. So it's prudent to make plans. It's not a sin to make plans. James is dealing, though, with the arrogant practice of being so presumptuous about your future that you don't include God's will in the equation. So let's first consider what James is telling us about the kinds of people in our text in verse 13. Go to now, you that say, today or tomorrow we'll go to such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain. James is talking, remember, to Christian folks, Jewish Christian folks. I think especially considering the tone here is that they should know better. James is writing to a saved crowd. In James's day, there were many Jewish merchants who, many of whom believed in Jesus, who made their living by traveling around from one area to another, buying and selling goods. As towns sprung up and trade routes developed, oftentimes each individual town would have its own kind of specialized product. Now, like wool or gold, there was one city that was famous for its eye salve. And if you remember Lydia, she was a seller of purple from Thyatira. That was their specific product. So James is writing to those kind of people, and his first words here are, go to now, which is essentially the New Testament way of saying, hey, listen to this. By the way, it is a great day for good opening words to a text. This morning it was ho, and now it is go to now, right? This is a very abrupt way of getting across the idea of, well, listen up. Right? I want you to get this. And then he specifies the group he's talking about. He's saying, you that say, you that have this attitude, you that say this kind of thing. He gives a picture here of businessman who thinks he can run his own life. He's been very practical. He's made some logical and well thought out plans for the future. Plans, I know it's a short little verse, but we get the plans in a kind of detail that shows just how well thought out it is. He's not being spontaneous. He has a thoroughly developed business plan. He's determined the best time to implement the plans. Today or tomorrow, we're going to leave. He knows exactly where he's going. He says to such a city. It's a way of saying, you know, this or that specific city. He knows how long he's going to be gone to accomplish his goals. It's going to take us a year, and what we're going to do while we're there, there's a specific objective in mind. We're going to buy, and we're going to sell, and we're going to make profits. Now let's just stop for a moment and consider a question. Is this businessman's planning sinful? Is it wrong to have a plan for the future? After all, we only have to have a certain amount of planning for the future. You gotta, you end up and go to work tomorrow because you anticipate getting a paycheck in the future, right? If you go to school, you study because you know there's a test coming. You want graduation to happen. Future planning in and of itself is not sinful. The problem with this businessman isn't specifically what he's saying or doing, but it's the attitude with which he has said and done these things. It isn't that he's developed a plan. The problem is the way he's developed his plan. He's not taking God's will into consideration. So in verse 13, James begins by describing a person who makes plans without considering the will of God whatsoever. And then in verse 14, he begins to explain why that's so foolish. Whereas, you know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. James is using some pretty simple logic. First off, it's foolish to plan that way because you don't know the future. You know not what shall be on the morrow, he says. You don't know about tomorrow. You just live from day to day. Thanks for picking that song. I think you were planning ahead. We're not only ignorant of what tomorrow will bring, we don't even know what the next 5 minutes is going to bring. Proverbs 27 verse 1 says, boast not thyself of tomorrow, for you know not what a day may bring forth. Only God knows what's going to happen tomorrow. So wouldn't it make sense to include him on your planning? Since he knows more than you? Instead, even Christians, remember that's who James is writing to here. Even Christians will make plans about what job they're going to hold, what church they'll attend, what person they'll marry, what house they'll buy, what classes they'll take, what retirement's going to look like, and never seek God's will along the way. So James reminds us those kinds of plans are foolish because you don't even know the future. Second, that kind of planning is foolish because in one sense, you do know the future. You know this life ends in death. You don't know when that's going to happen, but James seems to be indicating it's likely to happen sooner than you're expecting it to. So when he says at the end of verse 14, for what is your life? It is a vapor that appears for a little while and vanishes away. Your life is a vapor. James is saying it is like if you get up in the morning and you look outside and there's fog and it quickly dissipates when the sun comes up, the fog's gone. You don't know when your life is going to end. Your life is like that vapor. It's you can't go outside and get a handful of fog, right? You don't have the grasp on your life that you think you do. Those kids that were in an accident this week, they didn't wake up thinking that that was going to be their last day. Some of you all know I'm a hockey fan, right? Last Sunday, there was a 24-year-old NHL player who died watching fireworks at his coach's house. That's all our lives. James has already said in chapter 1 that our lives are like grass, and the sun comes up early in the morning and it's hot, and soon the grass withers and the flower fades, and we're here and we're soon gone. It might remind us of the man Jesus described in the Gospels. Jesus talked to this man, and just listen to how many times this man focuses on his own plans instead of God's plan. In Luke 12, verses 16 through 19, says he spoke a parable unto them, saying, "The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully, and he thought within himself, saying, 'What shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits?' And he said, 'This will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have much goods laid up for the future. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry.'" Catch how self-focused that man was. God had given him a great fortune in farming. And if he'd sought God's will, God may have moved him what to do with that bounty. He might have been a blessing to other people. Instead, he got self-centered. And I'm going to save it. I'm going to be rich for years to come. And Jesus says in the next verse, "God said unto him, 'You fool, this night your soul be required of you. Then what shall those things be which you have provided?'" Right? I'm going to save it. No, you're not. You're going to die. It's arrogant of us to make presumptions about tomorrow because we simply do not know what will happen or if we'll even be here, James says. If that's not how we should be, then how should we be? Well, verse 15, James explains it. Here's what you ought to say. "If the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that." It is the will of God that is the ultimate, the determining factor in all of world history and in each one of our lives. Proverbs 16:9 says, "A man's heart devises his way, but the Lord directs his steps." Proverbs 19:21, "There are many devices in a man's heart. Nevertheless, the counsel of the Lord, that shall stand." The future is simply not in our hands. We can't determine for ourselves what the future will bring any more than we can cause the past to have happened according to our own plan. It's going to unfold according to God's will, James says. But there are a couple of perspectives here about God's will for us to keep in mind. When the Bible speaks about God's will, it isn't just speaking about the ultimate outcome of all things according to His sovereignty. That is one kind of God's will. That is His prescriptive will, or sometimes it's called God's sovereign will. When God says, "This is what will be," that is what will be. But there's also the revealed will of God, in the sense that He has revealed His will for us, for our character and our behavior. He has outlined here Christian principles and Christian morals and Christian behavior in His Word. He has thoroughly equipped us for all good works. That is His revealed will. Your life is best lived confidently in both of those. And Jesus is our example in this. He not only accomplished the sovereign will of God, He also lived out perfectly the revealed will of God. Can you imagine Jesus bottling arrogant presumption for us? Saying something without regard to the will of the Father. "Oh, today or tomorrow, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. We're going to go to this city. We're going to continue a year. We're going to buy, sell. We're going to make profit." That kind of arrogant presumption would never have come out of Him. What did He model for us? Well, in John 5, verse 30, I can of my own self do nothing. I seek not my own will, but the will of the Father which sent me. In John 6:38, I came down from heaven not to do my will, but the will of him that sent me. He lived in the revealed will of God. He modeled for us an attitude of and actions of always doing what the Father wills, what the Father approves of. And so when James says in verse 15, you ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall do this or that. He's not just saying, add the words to your vocabulary so that Lord willing becomes part of your natural vocabulary. He's outlining obedience to God's will like Jesus was obedient to God's will. This lining up with God's will is not merely saying, well, if God permits me, I'm going to do such and such. But it's the attitude of, I'm going to plan to do those things that God has said are good things to do. Unless you line your life up according to God's revealed will in Scripture, you can make plans, but those plans will still be complete rubbish. And tacking on Lord willing to those plans is not going to make them any better. I'm going to rob a bank tomorrow, Lord willing. I'm going to cheat on my wife tomorrow, Lord willing. I'm going to run the pastor over with the car, Lord willing. You think, oh, Brother Jason, that's ridiculous. Nobody does that. Well, really? How many of us in this room right now already have a plan to engage in some sort of sin and then pretend to still have the Lord's blessing on our life? Probably more than we would dare imagine to admit. There's much that Scripture is not going to tell you about God's will, right? You're not going to open up to the book of Second Opinions and discover whether or not you should choose the fish or the chicken for lunch, right? That's not going to be revealed to you through God's will. But the plans we make for our future are far beyond that kind of thing. And until you're looking in this book and seeking the principles and the precepts of God for His people, this word that is good for doctrine and for reproof and for correction and for righteous instruction, until you've done that in your planning of the future, you're not planning your future in accordance to God's will. James says in verse 16, but now you rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. I actually think the New King James Version has the sense of this really well. It says, but now you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. We foolishly presume, and that is not good. In fact, James goes beyond saying that. He says that it's ignorant. In the literal sense, right, you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, so that bragging is, in fact, ignorant, and it's also arrogant. All such rejoicing, it's bragging, it's evil. Why is it evil? Because without including God in your plan, all that's left in your plan is me. I. Like the rich man Jesus described, he thought within himself, what shall I do? I have. This is what I will do. I will put down barns. I will build bigger barns. I will keep all this profit. I will say to my soul, you've got it easy. It's sinful because it's arrogant. It's sinful because it ignores God. It's sinful because you know better. James is writing to Christians. And so look at verse 17. Therefore, to him that knows to do good and does it not, to him it is sin. We get caught up in this idea of sin being doing something wrong. That sin is like the active doing of something wrong. Well, let me ask, up in verse 13, when the man planned to go to a city and buy and sell and make profit, was any of that specifically wrong? Is traveling or buying or selling or making profit in a business, it's not intrinsically wrong. But the attitude of arrogance is wrong. The refusal to include God's will in the equation is wrong. Leaving God out of the planning is wrong because it's sin. It's not sin because it's something you've done. It's sin because it's something you've failed to do. Right? And that's what James is talking about in verse 17. If you know to do good and you don't do it, it's sin. We're talking about these as sins of commission. Right? You commit sin when you do something actively that you know you should not do. But there are also sins of omission in which you fail to do those good things that you know that you should do. And James is simply saying here, planning your future according to God's will, you know is something that you should do. And when you're not doing it, it's sin. Thankfully here, he tells us what to do in order to be right. It's right there in the middle of the text in verse 15. For you ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. There are a lot of examples in the New Testament of not just saying, well, if it's God's will or Lord willing, but in actually really being submissive to God's will. In Acts 18:23, Paul told the church at Ephesus that he planned on going to Jerusalem and keeping the feast, but, quote, I will return again to you if God wills, right? Here's my plan, but I know my plan is secondary to God's plan. He says the same thing to the church at Corinth two different times. In 1 Corinthians 4:19, he says, but I will come to you shortly if the Lord will. In chapter 16, verse 7, he says, for I will not see you now by the way, but I trust to tarry a while with you if the Lord permit. What's Paul saying in those places? Well, he needed to make plans. You know, the Apostle Paul, if you've read Acts, he was a plan maker. But he'd sought the Lord's will, and he said, here's my plan if it's God's plan. Right? Here's my plan, and I see in my plan to go to this place and declare the gospel, that fits with God's revealed will of things that he says are good to do. And so because it fits with God's revealed will of what he says are good to do, it is my plan for what to do, and if God in his sovereign will overrules that and has a different plan, I'll go with that. It's going to be better. God's plan is always the best thing for us anyway. Look, I don't know about your life, but in mine, I have gotten my way too many times to think that getting my way is a good thing. Seek the Lord's will, and when you think you understand it through Scripture, then follow it. Make your plans to be in conformity with God's revealed will, and also recognize that God in his sovereign will might have a different plan and be ready to submit to it if he does. When it comes to specific questions about God's will, we need to make sure that any plan we make is done based on studying his word and prayerfully asking for his guidance. Every wise Christian should seek the Lord's leading for the plans in their life. For all the plans in our life. Right? Are you thinking about marriage? Well, don't plan that without asking God what he wants. If you're contemplating going to college, you know, you need to ask yourself, what would God have me be prepared to do? If you're thinking about a career change, well, you need to prayerfully seek God's guidance, not just make your own plans. Are you thinking about moving? Well, where would the Lord want me to move? Because in his revealed will, he has showed us it's the purpose of Christians to be a member of a church and to serve in that church. Where can I go and do that? Are you thinking of retiring? Well, what is it that God in his revealed will says you should be doing with your time? For you young folks who have been through King's Kids, we have done our best to try to drill this into your head so you carry this with you in your life. Right? Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Right? You seek God first. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not into your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he'll direct your paths. If you've been in his word and you've prayerfully asked for his guidance and sought to be submissive to his will, then your planning can be done following the example of Jesus. You can have planning to do God's will, just living your life saying, you know, my plan going forward is that it is my will to do God's will. let's see what it is and make our plans accordingly.